KIOS-FM presents another luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club. This program was recorded by KIOS-FM on Thursday, July 22, 2004, for broadcast at this time. Today's speaker will be Daryl Draper from the Nebraska Humanities Council. Mr. Draper will portray George Druyer, who has been called the most important member of the Lewis and Clark expedition. The opinions expressed are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of the Omaha Press Club, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the program is Dale Munson.
A little over 200 years ago, newly elected President Thomas Jefferson conceived a plan for exploring and mapping the American West. He chose his most trusted assistant and presidential secretary, Meriwether Lewis, to command the project. During the Lewis and Clark expedition, whenever the two captains needed someone who could travel alone through the wilderness for hundreds of miles, complete a task, then find his way back to the expedition, which was constantly on the move, or who could supply the 400 pounds of game needed every day to feed the expedition, or communicate by sign language with the Native American Indians who had never seen a white man before, nor spoke any language known to white men, or stand his ground ready to fight to the end, whether facing a wounded and angry 1,200-pound grizzly bear, or when outnumbered 15-1 by hostile Indians, they called upon one man over and over again. During their courageous and incredible 7,000-mile journey across America into the history books, that man is George Druyer, hunter, interpreter, and Indian Sign Language talker for the Lewis and Clark Expedition. Today, he is here to tell you his story. So please welcome George Druyer of the Lewis and Clark Expedition.
Going to the four winds. of Wakanda. I tell my father about this. I say, Father, do you believe me? He said, white man believe many things about spirit. White man believe if a person good when they die, their spirit go up. If a person bad, their spirit go down. But Indian believe everything has spirit. Mountain has spirit. Forest has spirit. River has spirit. But it is only the Indian who can open their heart to hear the word spoken by these spirit things. I say, but Father, do you believe I can look down through the eyes of my spirit brother, the red-tailed hawk, and see myself standing on the ground? He said, I believe that you believe. C'est ça. French for that's it. Say no more about this. He said, now it's time for you to come with me. Live among the white man. Learn the white man way. I traveled with my father to Fort Massac, American Army fort on the Ohio River, in what you today call southern Illinois. There at Fort Massac, I become a hunter for the food for the American soldier. I become the best shot in the entire Ohio Valley. I learn Indian sign language from my father. I can speak to all the tribes of the Ohio Valley. One day, at Fort Massac, big strange boat come down Ohio River. Two men get out of this boat. Army coat. Much gold braid. Big fancy hat. Feather. I think, this must be George Washington, huh? No. He said, I am Captain Meriwether Louis. This is Captain William Clark. We want you, Dreyer, to go on expedition with us. I said, where this expedition go? He said, go to Ocean. I said, that easy. Go down Mississippi River. You go to Ocean. He said, no. We go to Pacific Ocean. I said, go down Mississippi River to Atlantic Ocean. Get on ship. Sail to Pacific Ocean. He said, no. We go up Missouri River to Pacific Ocean. I said, what crazy white man think of this idea? Missouri River don't go up to ocean. Missouri River go up to mountain. He said, we travel Missouri River up to mountain, cross over mountain to Columbia River. Travel Columbia River to Pacific Ocean. I said, this has never before been done. I said, there are beaucoup Spanish soldiers who would kill Americans who trespass on the land of Spain. He said, it's no more the land of Spain. Spain give Louisiana to France. France out to America in Louisiana purchase. I said, there are beaucoup Spanish soldiers who have no hear about this purchase. There are beaucoup bad Indians who would kill you for those brass buttons on your coat. How many men you plan to take with you on this expedition? 3, maybe 2,000. He said, so far, we have 12 men and one dog. Sacre bleu! You are making joke with Dreyer. Dreyer no go on crazy expedition for crazy white man leader. No. He said, we pay you to go. I said, how much those men on that boat there get paid? He said, those men get paid $5. I said, $5 per month. That beaucoup money. But I no pull that big heavy boat up Missouri River. No, Dreyer no go. He said, you do not have to pull the boat. We want you to be hunter for the expedition. These men eat 8, 9, 10 pounds meat per day. We want you to be sign talker for the expedition. We pay you $10 per month. I say, no, I'm not caring what you pay. Dreyer, no go. He said, we pay you $25 per month. I say, you wait here. I go pack my bag. The boat leave for Massac. Travel down Ohio River to Mississippi River. Up Mississippi River to St. Louis. We make camp for the winter in St. Louis. Then in May, we leave St. Louis. It is the job of Dreer to travel ahead of the expedition by horse along the bank of the river to hunt for game. After we pass the mouth of the Platte River, Captain Louis, Captain Clark want to have powwow with the Oto Indians. Send Dreer to find the Oto. I travel along the bank of the Platte River, but the Oto village, empty. They are to the west, hunting the buffalo. I travel all the way to the river you today call Elk Horn River. There I find one Oto Missouri Indian. I speak to him in sign language. I invite him back to the camp. One of our men, La Liberté, he is half French, half Oto Indian. He speak to this Indian more clearly and tell him what we are wanting. Then he go with the Indian to find his chief to come to powwow. Captain Louis, Captain Clark, make preparation for this powwow at a place called Council Bluff. No Council Bluff, Iowa! They steal that name. Council Bluff here on this side of Missouri River is today a place you call Fort Calhoun, Nebraska. But if Dreer have not find this one Oto Missouri Indian, today there would be no place called Council Bluff. Further up the river, we come to the land of the Yankton-Sioux Indian. These are good Indians. They invite us to their village. We smoke sacred pipe with them. We take presents with them. The Yankton-Sioux warrior, they dance for the men of the expedition. The men of the expedition, they dance for the Yankton-Sioux. One of our men, Pierre Cousin, he can play the fiddle. One of our men, he can dance on his hands with his feet in the air. After we leave the Yankton village, all the men, Puku Aki. Captain Clark called the name of our camp that night, Camp Good Humor. Because all the men are in good humor, because the Yankton Sioux Indian were in good humor. Further up the river, we come to the land of the Teton Sioux. These are bad Indians. When they speak, I can see their eyes. Do not touch their spirit. They have just come back from war party where they have killed 78 Omaha warriors. They are making big ceremony dance with the scalps of these warriors on their acoustic. They have captured 48 Omaha women and children. Pierre Cruzat, the fiddle player, he is half French, half Omaha Indian. He speak to these women. She tell him she has heard the Teton Sioux talking. They're trying to kill all the men of the expedition. Take all of our guns. Take all of our presents. Captain Louis said, we must go. Captain Louis go down to the river. He get into the keelboat with 22 soldiers. Then 12 more soldiers get into the pirogue, the rowboat with the sail. Three, Captain Clark, 8 other men, we are in the last pirogue. We are trying to leave. But one of the Teton Sioux warriors come down to the river. He grabbed the rope to the pirogue and will not let go the rope. Captain Clark said, let go that rope. But the Indian will not let go. Now 8, 9, 10 more warriors come down. They grab a hold of the rope to the pirogue. One of the warriors wrapped his arms around the mast to the pirogue. Captain Clark become Puku Ani. He put his sword. He said, let go that rock. When Captain Clark put his sword, all the men on the keelboat, all the men in the pirogue, in the water, all the men on shore, make ready for war. But there are only 40, 45 soldiers. On the shore, there are 250, perhaps 300 Tetons and warriors, all pulling arrow back in their boat. If one soldier fire one bullet, if one Teton Sioux warrior let go an arrow, there will be massacre, and the Luyen Park exposition stop at this place. But Chief Black Buffalo come down to the river. He said, these men are angry because you have not give them enough presents. Give them more presents, they let go the rock. Captain Clark said, presents? I give them present. I give them present of American steel, eh? Captain Lewis said, no, no, throw some tobacco. One of the men in the piro throw some tobacco. Chief Black Buffalo pick up this tobacco, give to the warriors. He take the rope from the warriors, give to Captain Clark. Captain Clark pulling the rope to the piro. We jump in the boat. We paddle buku fast up the river. Nice try, Teton Sioux. That night, all the men, buku angry. Captain Clark called the name of our camp that night. Camp Bad Humor. Because now all the men are in bad humor. Because the Teton Sioux warrior were in bad humor. Today, the place where we make that camp is called the Bad River in South Dakota. And today, South Dakota is called the Bad Lands. Further up the river, we come to the five villages that the man down he does to Indians. These are good Indians. These five villages of Mandan and Hidatsu, bigger at this time in history than Washington City or St. Louis. The Mandan invite us to their village. We smoke sacred pipe with them. We exchange presents with them. The Mandan women, very friendly to our men. The Mandan invite us to make camp with them for the winter. We build a fort called Fort Mandan. We go hunting with the Mandan and Hidatsu Indian. And there, among the Hidatsu village, we find a French-Canadian fur trader. His name, Toussaint Charbonneau. Toussaint Charbonneau is perhaps 50, 55 summer old. He has been living and trading among the Hidatsu. He has two Indian wives. One of his wives is named Tsukegouye. Tsukegouye is perhaps 17 summer. But when she was 10 summer, she was captured from her Shoshone people by the Hidatsu, raised among the Hidatsu. And when she has become 16, she has become married to Toussaint Charbonneau. We know that the Shoshone Indians who live in the Rocky Mountains have buku horses, many, many horses. We will need to trade with them for these horses to carry our equipment over the mountain. We ask her, will you come on the expedition with us? Be interpreter to the Shoshone Indians. Be our guide to the Shoshone village. But Toussaint Charbonneau said, no! This my woman! You hire me to go on expedition, I bring my woman with me. So, we hired a totally worthless Toussaint Charbonneau to go on expedition. Heard up the river, we come to Grand Cascade, the great falls of Missouri River. Five, six, magnificent waterfall. We must pull the six bolts around these waterfalls. Each bolt weighs 1 ton. the distance, 20 miles across canyon, mountain, in the summer sun. For days, weeks, a month, we pull these boats and equipment around this waterfall. We get back into the river. We are traveling up the river. And one day, Sacagawea throw her arms into the air. Ah, yeah! And through her interpreter husband, she said, I recognize this place. This place close to where my Shoshone people live. Captain Louis said, we must find the Shoshone. Drea, come with me. Shield, come with me. Private McNeil, come with me. The four of us leave the expedition. Travel 1, 2, 3, 4 days ahead of the expedition, following the waters of Missouri River, which grow smaller, smaller as they trickle down from the mountain, then disappear under rock. We climb up the mountain to a pass, a place you call Continental Divide. Upon this pass, Captain Louis see Indian woman with two little girls. They are digging roots, gathering berry. Captain Louis put down his gun. He go to the woman. Paint her cheeks with vermilion. The red paint, symbol of peace to Shoshone. Captain Louis go for Drea. I speak to the woman in sign language. We come in peace. My chief won't speak to your chief. You bring him here. She understand. She leave. The four of us are waiting on another plane. No place to hide. Waiting. Wait. Then three. Your tongue? Blue sky, no tongue. Horses. Over the hill. 50, 60 Shoshone warrior galloping on their ponies. War paint. Come back. Bow and arrow. Galloping. Door off. Drea, make ready for a walk. Captain Louis say no. Captain Louis put down his gun. He go walking into the charging ponies, pulling up seats. Say, Tababon. Tababon. He has asked the Kedwea, what is the Shoshone word for white man? There is no Shoshone word for white man. The Shoshone Indian never before have seen white man. She tell him the Shoshone word for stranger. There is Captain Louis, no gun, wrapped in American flag, walking into charging ponies, pulling up sleeves, saying, stranger, stranger. They know that already. This cuckoo strange man, wrapped in funny blanket, pulling up sleeves, saying, stranger, stranger. Bah, he is speaking Shoshone. The chief of the Shoshone jumped from his horse. He walked up to Captain Louis. Look Captain Louis in the eye. Mean look. Then he throws his arms around Captain Louis. Give Captain Louis a hug. Both cheeks. Each one of the Shoshone warriors jump from their horse. Come to Captain Louis. Give Captain Louis a hug. Both cheeks. Now Captain Louis have more war paint on him than Indian. Drea talk to the chief. We come in peace. One, your people travel with us. Important. You wait 4 days. But he say he cannot wait. His people starving to death. They must follow Tatanka, the buffalo, or they will die. Drea say, Puku important. You wait 4 days. He say he wait. In 4 days, Captain Clark catch up to us. With him is the Kaguya. Her work less husband, two sons charbon. Mon ami, my friend, Francois Labiche. And Captain William Clark. Captain Clark speak only English. Mon ami, my friend, Francois Labiche, he speak English and French. Terrible boatman, Toussaint Charbonneau. He speak French and Hidatsu. The Kaguya speak Hidatsu and Shoshone. Chief Kamawayak of the Shoshone speak only Shoshone. This is the way we are negotiating for these critical horses. Shoshone. Hidatsu. French. English. French. Hidatsu. Shoshone. Back and forth. When suddenly, the Kaguya throw her arms in the air.
Ah, yeah!
And she throw her arms around to come away. We are thinking she has gone crazy. That her mind has walked away from her body, yeah? But no, she has recognized Chief Kamahuayak as her brother, who she has not seen since she was captured when she was 10 summer. Chief Kamahuayak recognized his little sister. He said, "Are these people good people?" She said, "I believe these people good people." He said, "I will provide to them the horses they are wanting. Without this miracle, the Louis and Clark expedition stop at the Rocky Mountains. But now with the horses provided to us by Chief Kamahuayak, we can continue west toward the ocean. Merci beaucoup, Chief Kamahuayak." C'est Kaguya. Him, my friend, Francois Labiche, and Captain William Clark. With the horses provided to us by Chief Kamahuayak, we crossed the Rocky Mountains. We follow river led by Louis and Clark, terrible fast river, across mountain, day after day, nothing to eat. Until one day, Captain Clark, "Ocean View! Hold the joy! Ocean View!" And 33 people line up on rock overlooking the Grand Pacific Ocean in the rain. I look at ocean. I turn to Captain Louis. I say, "This is Pacific Ocean. Now we go back to St. Louis, yeah?" He said, "No. Winter is in the mountain. There is no food for the man to eat. Soon the snow be this deep. We must make camp for the winter." "But where to make this camp?" "Camp close to ocean, where maybe we see English sheep, Yankee sheep. We could trade with this sheep for food. Or camp 8, 9, 10 miles away from the ocean, close to forest, where maybe we see deer, elk, something to shoot for food. Where to make this camp?" Captain Louis, Captain Clark called all the people together. He said, "Take vote where to make camp." York, a black servant of Captain Clark, he vote. "The Kaguya, woman." She vote. "Truya, Indian." Vote. "It would be 65 more years before black Americans can vote. It would be 113 more years before American woman can vote. It would be 119 more years before American Indian can vote. But on this day, all vote. We vote to make camp close to Osho. We call the name of this camp Fort Clatsop, because the Clatsop Indian live close by. We stay at this fort 4 months. It rained every day, except when. The men are buku eager to go back to St. Louis. In the spring, we leave Fort Clatsop, travel back over the mountain. Captain Louis follow back the waters of Missouri River. Captain Clark follow back the waters of Yellowstone River. Where the two rivers meet, we rendezvous, rejoin, and travel back peacefully to St. Louis. There in St. Louis, we are all big heroes. They say, oh, Captain Louis, come, tell us the story of the expedition. Tell how we now have 122 more animals, 178 more plants for the white man's book of learning. Oh, Captain Clark, you come. Tell how you are the only person to make map from St. Louis to the Pacific Ocean and back. Oh, Drea, you come. Tell how you have used sign language to make peace with 50 tribes of Indians. Drea wants to leave St. Louis. After I receive my pay, I become the richest Shawnee Indian in America. I buy land from two of the men of the expedition. In 1 month, I sell this land for 2 times what I pay for it. Now I'm having so much money, I'm not knowing what to do. Spanish fur trader, Manuel Lisa, he come to me and say, can you guide me back up Missouri River? Can you show me where you see all the elk, all the beaver, all the buffalo? I say, I was guide for Louis and Clark, of course. He say, become my partner in the fur trade. In 1807, we are preparing to leave, to come back up Missouri River. One of my friends come to me and say, Drea, you have lead the white man to the west. Will now the Indian have a better life in the west? I say, I am not known if the Indian will have better life. I'm not knowing if the white man will have better life. But I know that things will never be the way that they were before. I go in peace. Cessa!
Version of the George Drea story. My name is Daryl Draper. This story has went coast to coast, 12 states, and I'm doing about 200 presentations a year right now. I will be at the signature event and the 10 of Many Voices coming up here this weekend after next. Do you have any questions? I take you've written them down. I have Chief Kahawaiat. No.
And I get to read them, and they're written in French. That's a problem. But this first one is, tell us about Sergeant Floyd. What did he die of, and how was he treated? Did he suffer much?
Sergeant Floyd died on August 20th, 1804, on their trip up to the Mandan villages. Of course, we don't have a conclusive autopsy, but they think it was from a ruptured appendix. Had Sergeant Floyd, 22 years old at the time, been in the finest hospital in Philadelphia, they still would not have been able to do anything for him because they didn't have invasive surgery at that time. Remarkably, he was the only person to die during the expedition from the expedition party. One man, La Liberté, the man who speaks half French and half Oto-Indian, he disappeared without a trace. I have my own theories about that, but I won't share them with you because I don't want to confuse people who have studied the history books. But George Drewyer caught La Liberté, and according to the journals, gave La Liberté the slip. I don't believe that La Liberté could have given George Drewyer the slip.
So tell us what happened to George Drewyer in succeeding years.
George Drewyer went up the river with Manuelisa. According to local legend, Manuelisa stood on a hill just about 10 miles downriver from here, and he said, "Oh, Buena Vista, beautiful view. Drewyer, how you say that in French?" And Drewyer say, "Beautiful view, la belle vue." And that's the mythology for the naming of the town of Bellevue. They went on up the river to the Three Forks. They had a very successful trapping season up there. But they had sent George Drewyer out to track down and bring back a deserter on their way up. George Drewyer did this. That leads to my theory of why La Liberté wouldn't have given him the slip. George Drewyer was given orders to bring back the man dead or alive. He brought him back halfway in between. The man died. His name was Antoine Bissonnette. His body was shipped back down to St. Louis. So in 1808, when Drewyer came back down the river, Manuelisa and Drewyer stood trial for murder there in St. Louis. The judge was Meriwether Lewis's landlord. On the jury was George Shannon, the youngest member of the Lewis and Clark expedition. And the prime witness for the defense was General William Clark, who stated that when one person deserts, that it jeopardizes the lives of the entire expedition, and therefore it was justifiable homicide. It took the jury 15 minutes to come to that same conclusion, and Drewyer was acquitted. He went back up the Missouri River. He was trapping at the Trois Forches, or the Three Forks of the Missouri River, where the three rivers come together to form the Missouri. He was attacked by a band of, we believe, Blackfeet Indians. He was caught all by himself. He had two firearms with him. He dispatched two Blackfeet Indian, and they overtook him and chopped him to pieces and scattered his body across the Three Forks area. Today there is a Drewyer fishing access point there near the Three Forks named after him.
The lady involved, the lovely Sacagawea, what happened to her?
I might say I don't remember Sacagawea looking so radiant ever in my life. Sacagawea came back as far as the Mandan villages after their trip to the Pacific Ocean. William Clark offered to adopt Pomp, the baby child born to Sacagawea on February 11th, 1805, while at the Mandan villages. But Sacagawea says, too young right now, maybe later. When Pomp was about 5 years old, he was taken down to St. Louis, put in the hands of William Clark. Their house is no longer there, but if you've ever seen that big, shiny arch in St. Louis, the north end of that arch sat right on the William Clark and Pomp house. He was raised by William Clark, spoke fluent French, English. Sacagawea, on the other hand, is reported to have died of disease in 1812 at Fort Manuel, which is on the South Dakota, North Dakota border, right on the Missouri River. There are five states, I believe, that claim Sacagawea's final resting place. Historians believe that her final resting place has been washed away by the Missouri River floods.
How much time did the expedition spend in what we call Yellowstone Park, or in that area? And did they report any of the observations of the natural wonders there?
The Lewis and Clark expedition split into five separate groups coming back over the Rocky Mountains. The group led by William Clark followed back the waters of the Yellowstone River. They were actually a little bit north of the boundary of the park. But one of the expedition members named John Coulter, who was given permission to leave the expedition near the Mandan villages and go on a fur trapping expedition with Hancock and Dixon, he stumbled into an area that had spouting geysers of steam and bubbling, boiling mud, and he reported it back to his comrades, and they said that that must be Coulter's Hell. Later, when it was mapped out and discovered, it was later changed to Yellowstone National Park, the first national park in the United States National Park System.
If you could talk a little bit about the hunting for game, if it was always sufficient, did the expedition rely on fish, other items from the river? What about natural berries and fruits and that sort of thing?
Well, they commented coming up the Missouri River that the land that we now call Nebraska had an abundant variety of mulberries, wild plums that Meriwether Lewis described as some of the most delicious tasting he had ever eaten. They also shot a bear down in what is now Missouri. Gray wolves along the river on the approach to Omaha, and they would send Druyer and three other hunters out. The three other hunters would come back with two empty-handed and one with a deer. Druyer would come back with six deer. Of course, the meat that they couldn't eat that night for supper, they would dry it and prepare it as jerky mixed with lard that they had and bear fat. And they would store that in pouches after it was sun-dried and eat that along the way. On this week, 200 years ago, at White Catfish Camp, just across the river on the Iowa side, they caught a magnificently large catfish, over 100 pounds, and about several hundred catfish during this five-day camp. They liked the taste of the catfish, but as they traveled over the mountains, we always think of the Rocky Mountains as just full of game, but in those days, during the winter, the game would leave the mountains to graze and to hunt in the valleys below. They went for days sometimes without seeing any game whatsoever. They resorted to killing some of the horses that Chief Kamhoeat had provided to them. And then as they approached the Columbia River, the salmon were running, and they were trapping hundreds of salmon, but the men quickly grew tired of the taste of the salmon, and they were taking the salmon in baskets to the Indian villages and trading them for dog meat, which was more palatable than the salmon was. There's no evidence that that Seaman, their Newfoundland dog, took part in any of those feasts.
Seems like I read somewhere that once they passed the mouth of the Platte, the current was not quite as strong in the Missouri. Is this correct? And how did they pole the boats, row the boats? How did they get them upstream?
Well, the Platte River added a lot of current velocity to the river below the mouth of the Platte. Once they got above the mouth of the Platte River, they found the Missouri River to be more sluggish and easier to navigate. The boat was equipped with a large sail, and I've done extensive canoeing on the Missouri River, and I can tell you that in the summertime, July, August, September, there is a significant amount of south winds that blow up that Missouri River, so much so that when you're canoeing down it, if you do not paddle, you do not go anyplace. You just stay right there in the wind and the river. So they used the sail whenever they could, but they were forced to
follow the deepest channel of the Missouri River, which is normally by the shore. And because the cottonwood trees would grow on the bank of the river and lean out, a lot of times they had to use the hinge in the sail, put the sail down, and either row, which they don't make much mention of rowing the boat, even though it was equipped with 22 oars, pole, where a person sticks a pole into the mud in the bottom and walks backwards on the boat, which propels the boat forward, or cordelling, which is a braided elk hide rope, where the men would just wade in waist-deep water day after day with sinking to their knees in mud and pulling that 13-ton boat loaded with 10 tons of cargo upriver against the current.
With all of the difficulties involved in the expedition, how did Lewis and Clark convince their men to stay with them during this entire journey?
Well, they were harsh disciplinarians on the early part of the journey, and that sort of set the tone, because after the Mandan villages, there was no record of any court-martials given, although they did send two men back, Moses Reed, who had deserted near the Council Bluff powwow with the Indians, and John Newman, who had made some statements that were considered mutinous up near the Mandan villages. After that, they went on river, and around the Great Falls area, they ran out of whiskey, so there was no need in going. they kept the men going up the river long enough with the daily supply of whiskey until it was too late for them to turn back. But the leadership exerted by Lewis and Clark always seemed to hold the men in close check, and they seemed both very respectful and also devoted to their two captains.
To bring us more up to date, how are the Indians of today accepting the celebrations of the expedition?
Well, the Native Americans of today do not consider the Lewis and Clark bicentennial a celebration. They consider it a commemoration. It's almost, that was the beginning of the end for life as they knew it. And we have had a lot of cooperation from the Native Americans. The Oto are going to be up at the signature event. But they don't look upon the Lewis and Clark event as most Americans do, as two heroes who helped double the size of known American land, but rather as two people that they helped and provided assistance to, and an expedition that would not have succeeded without their cooperation, and in return they received betrayals and loss of their land and loss of their cultures.
After the expedition obtained horses, what did they do with the keelboat?
Well, of course, they had horses leaving St. Louis, and they had the horses all the way up to the area of about Yankton, South Dakota, when their last of their horses were either misplaced or absconded with. Then they got to the Mandan villages, and they traded for a few more horses. But the keelboat turned back at the Mandan villages, just about 40 miles north of present-day Bismarck, North Dakota. And the keelboat went back. Among the cargo was a magpie and a prairie dog, several other live animals. But the magpie and the prairie dog are the only ones that made it back to St. Louis and all the way to Monticello to be presented to Thomas Jefferson. So the keelboat was just used to go to the Mandan villages.
So how did they return these samples, as it were, of the wildlife and other things? Did they send runners back, and did the runners go all the way, or was there a relay, or how did this work out?
Well, they intended to send people back from the Mandan villages, but they held on to those people until the ice on the Missouri River broke, and so then they sent all their messages back with the party of a small group of men, about 8, 9, 10 men who came back on the keelboat. When they left the Pacific, they meant to send people on ahead to give some messages and some documents to members of the Northwest Fur Company and the Hudson's Bay Company, who frequently visited the Mandan villages, but that party lost their way and lost some of their horses, and so they ended up just joining the party, and all the messages were put on hold until they got back to St. Louis, and then Drewyer was sent out with some messages, and letters were dispatched to Thomas Jefferson, who had already given up the expedition for dead.
In addition to those mentioned, or again going back to some of them, such as Sergeant York, are there any other tales that you could tell about some of the members of the expedition?
Well, coming, a favorite when I do school groups is coming back on the Missouri River. Meriwether Lewis led one small contingent back on the Missouri River, and along with him was Pierre Cruzat, the fiddle player. Pierre Cruzat had lost an eye sometime in youth, possibly due to a flintlock exploding in his eye. So he only had the use of one eye, and according to the journals, he didn't see very well out of the other. And Meriwether Lewis was always a little bit reluctant to go hunting with Pierre Cruzat. But after some cajoling, he decided that he would go hunting with Pierre Cruzat. Meriwether Lewis saw an elk. He was taking the bead on the elk when, bam, a gunshot goes off, and Meriwether Lewis is struck right in the derriere. The bullet goes in one side, out the other side. William Clark later described the wound as one bullet, four holes. For the next 30 days, Meriwether Lewis was commanding his little flotilla of dugout canoes, laying on his belly with his derriere in the prairie sunshine.
Now let's fast forward to 2004 and find out about a little bit about Darrell Draper. I think that Darrell Draper is the most interesting man, and in fact, George Drewyer is not the only one that is recreated by Darrell Draper. Is that right?
This all started back when I was a lieutenant commander in the Navy at Stratcom, although Plattsmouth is my hometown. I graduated from high school from Plattsmouth High. And my twilight tour in the Navy after 30 years of military was Stratcom. And we lived in Sarpy County, and my fourth grade daughter's teacher had heard me do some in-classroom presentations. She said, "We study Nebraska history in the fourth grade. Could you portray a Nebraska pioneer?" I asked her if she could be a little bit more vague. You know, we have all kinds of, we have pioneer bankers, commercial federal savings alone. That's four generations of bankers here in Omaha. We have the telegraph, Creighton. What kind of pioneers? She says, "Oh, you pick." Well, I thought, well, we lived in Sarpy County, and a lot of people do not realize that 33 years Peter Sarpy lived in what we now know as the state of Nebraska before Nebraska was a state. And so because we lived in Sarpy County, I came up with a costume, did a Peter Sarpy presentation. That presentation went over really big with the school, with the kids. I was passed on to another school, did another presentation. The Officers' Wives Club at Offutt Air Force Base wanted to see the presentation. I performed for them. In the audience was Admiral and Commander-in-Chief of Stratcom, Henry Child's wife. She says, "Hank, you got to see this guy do Peter Sarpy." So Admiral Childs says, "I understand you do a very entertaining and historically factual Peter Sarpy presentation. I'm hosting seven little private command dinners for Senate, Senator J.J. Exxon, for Ben Nelson, the chancellors of the three universities, the CEOs of the top corporations here in the Omaha Council Bluff area. Could you perform Peter Sarpy at those banquets? He's a four-star admiral. I'm a lieutenant commander. I'm thinking, yeah, I probably could. So I did those seven banquets, and after I retired from the Navy in 97, I started getting phone calls for Peter Sarpy performances. And I said, well, I'm retired now. I probably ought to be looking for a job. They said, we'll pay you. So I started doing Peter Sarpy presentations for civic groups and schools, and someone suggested I join the Nebraska Humanities Council to be in their Speakers Bureau lineup. I went down and auditioned in 2000. I was immediately accepted. They said, we'll take anything you've got. At that time, I had Peter Sarpy and J. Sterling Morton, the author of Arbor Day. In the first year, I went to the very top of the most requested performers in the Nebraska Humanities Council. I've been there ever since, and I've added George Drewyer and Daniel Freeman, America's first homesteader, to the list of costume performances. I also have with me some CDs that have not only this performance a little bit expanded that you heard today, but it also has a Broadway quality performance by Hassan Davis as York. Hassan Davis is a black lawyer from Kentucky, and I just finished the Chautauqua tour with him. Also, Hal Stearns, Brigadier General Hal Stearns, retired. He is on the National Foundation of the Lewis and Clark Bicentennial Commission, and formerly a state commission member. Also, Joyce Hunsicker, who is an absolutely spellbinding Sakakuia. I also have a little poem that I'd like to share with you. Oh, by the way, the CD, the proceeds from that CD go to help fund the Shannon Festival. You know, George Shannon got lost for about 11 days up in northeastern Nebraska, and those communities up in there have a Shannon Festival every year with statues of Shannon and the banners on their streets. That the proceeds from this CD help to provide funding for the Shannon Festival, which I will be performing at also coming up here next week. But I have a poem here that I would like to hand out to everyone for free. This is an original poem. You fold it in half, and it makes a good bookmark. If you fold it in fourths like this, it's a fine beer coaster. It keeps the rings off your coffee. It's called The Men of Lewis and Clark. By keelboat and pirogue, against the river flow, on their epic journey go the men of Lewis and Clark. Past the village of St. Charles, past Missouri's snags and snarls, toward misery, toil, and sorrows go the men of Lewis and Clark. They reach the mouth of River Platte. Clark notes it carefully on his map. 2 years shall pass before they're back for the men of Lewis and Clark. Gather the Otoes at Council Bluff to hear the speech of pomp and puff and pass out the trinket, white man stuff, from the men named Lewis and Clark. Then comes the death of Sergeant Floyd. To a hilltop grave, his body's buoyed, then cast a vote to fill the void among the men of Lewis and Clark. Sing and smoke with Yankton hosts, watch Tetons dance on Maha ghosts, then plod up river, a day's walk at most, for the men of Lewis and Clark. Make winter camp at Fort Mandan, enjoy the warmth of women tan, endure the cold the best you can, smile the men of Lewis and Clark. They meet a man called Charbonneau with Shoshone wife and babe in tow and enlist all three of them to go on the trail with Lewis and Clark. In the spring, the ice gives out a groan. The keelboat turns to south and home while 33 go west alone on the trail with Lewis and Clark. The Mandans warn of evil bears and Blackfeet belts of white man hair and countless dangers waiting there for the band of Lewis and Clark. But York and Janie, Pomp and men cross to the sea and back again. Through every hardship, 10 times 10, led by two amazing men named Lewis and Clark. And when at last their journey done, they wrote with pride to Jefferson, "You can call all this land American. Sincerely yours," from Lewis and Clark. May every day of your life be a voyage of discovery. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Daryl Draper. Thank you so very much for bringing history really to life to us today. Thanks to you folks in attendance, and also thanks to Bob Cote and the KIOS audience. Thank you so much for coming.
You've been listening to a luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club. Today's guest speaker was Daryl Draper from the Nebraska Humanities Council in a portrayal of George Dreuer, a member of the Lewis and Clark Expedition. This program was recorded by KIOS-FM on Thursday, July 22, 2004, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to Dale Munson for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. If you'd like to attend future forums, call the Omaha Press Club at 345-8008. These events are open to both members and non-members of the Omaha Press Club. The Omaha Press Club is located on the 22nd floor of the First National Center, 16th and Dodge, in downtown Omaha. Complete noon forum listings are available on the Internet. Visit our website at kios.org. Now this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.